My name is Sarah Bronstein. My novel is Bad Animals.
Sarah Bronstein's novel, Bad Animals, follows Maeve Cosgrove, a 40-something woman in the midst of change. She's an empty nester who loves her job at her local library, but she's been accused of spying on a teenager sneaking a boy into the public restroom. What follows is Maeve's journey through unemployment, infatuation, loss, and even adultery. I recently spoke with Sarah Bronstein about Maeve's unreliability, how perspective shapes a novel, and more. From KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Marginalia. I'm Beth Golay, and here's my conversation with Sarah Bronstein. So could you give our listeners a description of Bad Animals?
Yes. Well, so it's a novel in the broadest strokes. That's about libraries. It's from the point of view of a librarian. It's about motherhood. It's about literary culture, therapeutic culture, and also it's about adultery and other kinds of big mistakes. So it follows this librarian named Maeve Cosgrove, who's in her 40s, late 40s, mid 40s. She says everything has changed in her life all at once. So she's sort of in a place in her life where she works at the library. She loves the library with all her heart. And being at the library, I think, is a safe and ordered place for her to be. So it's all she wants is to stay in her job. And at a time when everything else in her life is sort of changing, her daughter's gone off to college, she's an empty nester, something very upsetting happens to her at the novel, in the library. And I'm not giving anything away because it happens in the very first chapter. You learn in the very first chapter that Maeve has been accused of something horrible, that a teenage patron of the library, a girl who Maeve kind of has been watching from afar, has accused her of spying on her in the bathroom while this girl has brought a boy into the bathroom. And from there, you know, that's just sort of the start of things. And the novel kind of explores Maeve's falling apart in a way as a famous writer comes to town, a writer that she has worked really hard to get come visit the library, comes to the library and ends up becoming involved with Maeve's community and enlisting her help in writing a novel about another library patron who's a refugee, a boy from Sudan.
So I want to talk about point of view, a couple of things really. First, I'm bad at identifying this, but for most of the book, is it third person limited?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, we're learning the story through Maeve.
Yeah, I'd say exactly. So for most of the book, this is a close third person point of view. We're sort of hearing Maeve's thoughts, but we're not in the first person. So there's sort of a narrator outside the story kind of helping us see it through Maeve's eyes is how I see it.
How reliable is Maeve? Because there were a few points like in the early part of the book that sort of popped up as red flags for me. You know, she would see herself as an actress, like someone throwing away perfectly good food after one bite, or she describes her family like characters in a book, and she was afraid to tell her husband something because he might think she was quote unquote sick. And then there was the description of her family. She said they were a little off, her people. So how reliable is a third person limited point of view, and in particular Maeve's?
Well, I mean, I am so interested in kind of Maeve's unreliability. And I think that kind of close third person is a way you can get at some of what you're talking about. I mean, I think Maeve probably sees herself as perfectly reliable, but I also think that the book is in some ways an attempt to demonstrate kind of what a person trying to convince themselves of something, to demonstrate what's going on in their mind at that time, because Maeve is also rationalizing some really bad and strange decisions maybe as the novel goes on, so it's in some ways like we see a character trying to kind of grapple with, you know, the consequences of her own decisions and also maybe justify them. Or I'm interested in how she kind of makes the choices she makes when she makes them.
Now, this is a question about perspective, but mainly more about craft. Maeve speaks with Harrison about changing the perspective of the book he's writing. And he says, I'm at the mercy of the voice. He couldn't imagine anything until he heard a voice. And once he did, it was as good as done. Is that the case for you as a writer as well?
I mean, that's so interesting because I feel like that's a very, that, you know, that line that Harrison says where he's like, I have to do it this way. Because in the novel, Harrison, who's this famous writer, is writing someone else's story in the first person, you know, as a novel with the cooperation and consent of that person. So there's a way that Harrison sort of justifying his decision, like, I can't change it. I have no, you know, the story is bigger than I am. It's telling it to itself to me. And I think that's kind of a cop out, you know, in a way. So I think, I think a voice can appear. And I think this book was always in the close third person like that, because it lets me get at that unreliability, but not be stuck inside her head all the time. But I do think that it's that line from Harrison is actually, I think it upsets Maeve in some ways. We see because of some of her decisions later on that he's saying, well, now I've written this novel in the first person, so it can't be any other way. But of course, you know, once you're deep into something and you hear a voice, it's hard enough to find a voice. Why would you want to give it up? And Maeve's voice came to me slowly over time. And, you know, I was really committed to capturing something human and messy and maybe not quite perfect. And I liked that, you know, that sometimes I think she's, because her life is falling apart, because she's kind of slipping in a way, sometimes it seems like her observations are tweaked, you know, like sometimes she might be more or less connected to what, to kind of a reality that we might see.
I developed a class called Experiments in Point of View while I was teaching this novel. So I taught a class that asked students to think about who speaks and sort of why and to whom and how. And of course, in this novel, as I was trying to figure it out, I realized that, you know, Harrison is speaking as Willie and then Maeve starts speaking as Libby. And the idea of like this kind of, you know, is this imaginative kind of like empathic appropriation or empathic kind of joining? And when is this a kind of taking and a like a self-serving claiming or appropriation of someone else's story? And so we had really rich conversations about that. And then I taught a class on revision, which also kind of mirrored. And so I'm basically teaching these classes that sort of touch my own process, which has been a lovely thing.
I want to ask about the epigraph, because it comes from Paige Cosgrove, the fictional narrator's daughter, as well as Dostoevsky. Can you talk to me about the idea of bad animals?
Yes, thank you for that. So Bad Animals was always my working title. And that dream is actually a dream that my young son had when I was starting to work on this book, but I didn't have the working title. I was working on a book about a librarian, and you know, I was thinking about literary culture, and my son woke up one day and just said, I had a dream. Let's see. He said, I was on a farm. There was a cage. And I said, what's that cage for? And the answer was, that's where we put the bad animals.
So I think this idea of a place where we put bad animals, a cage where we put things that don't belong, that we can't tolerate in ourselves. I don't know. That was very interesting to me. So I had that quote on my desk as kind of a touchstone. And then it all just kind of fused. And I realized that maybe that's what I was writing about in this book, where we put the bad animals, or animals behaving badly. People behaving badly, strangely. So I actually did a thing I hardly ever do, which is I just sort of took from real life. And I decided that that was going to be a dream that this precocious girl has in the novel. So Maeve's daughter actually has the dream that my son had. And he generously said I could give it to Paige. So I appreciated it. And that's where I got the title. And it was just a working title. And so many books that had animals kind of came out, and I was worried they wouldn't let me keep bad animals. And somehow I had come upon the Dostoevsky, and I thought it was wonderful to just pair Dostoevsky with a child from a book. And I thought, you know, this idea of people being artistically cruel And I don't think that my book is inherently a depiction of people being artistically, cruel, but I think cruelty is a part of the book and kind of part of Maeve and part of everyone.
You know, Maeve's daughter Paige, who we were just talking about, she entrusts Maeve to take care of her plants. And earlier you said this is a book about motherhood. Was this her way of continuing to be a mother?
I think absolutely. And I think Maeve is taking care of the plants. It's a kind of, she wants it to be a kind of solace. She even sings to the plants. She sings lullabies that she once sang her daughter. So I think she wants the plants to be solace and tries to care about them, but fundamentally misses her daughter so much and is so perplexed by her daughter's world, by her daughter's universe. So I think the plants are a source of of tension. She forgets about them, but then when she sees that the plants start blooming after a long time and that the animals are eating the plants, she becomes more interested in, and the animals are acting a little strangely. She becomes kind of more interested in the plants. But I think, yeah, I think her desire to be to take care of something, I think potentially that's what she was first looking at Libby toward, this girl in the library, or looking toward Libby, thinking maybe this is a place where I can put some care. Maybe the plants are a place where I can put some care. Oh, maybe this famous writer Harrison Riddles, maybe I can put some care over there and help facilitate this relationship between this writer and his subject. But also, I think she certainly feels like, I think, resentful, because of course we know that she has written the writer letters about the subject as well, and in some ways feels responsible for bringing them together, but no one is giving her credit.
Were you already acquainted with plants in the natural world, or did you have to do some research for that part of the book?
I think that I really, for a long time, felt too unacquainted with plants in the natural world to write about them. And so I did talk to some biologists, and this is the lovely thing about being a teacher. I teach at Colby College in Maine, and I can talk to biologists. I can get it. That said, when I finally decided I have to just finish this book because I had pieces of it and it was sort of coming together. But I thought the plants are the thing I don't understand. And I realized, like, no, I'm just going to completely invent. This is where being a fiction writer, this is where I get to just really lean into that, because I decided I would just make them do what I wanted them to do. And it's probably, it's the little bit of magic in the book.
And do you have actual experience with libraries? I mean, I love the shelf of shame.
Oh my gosh. I talk about that with my students. We sort of talk about the books that are on our shelf of shame, which then I tried to dissuade them of that notion, because, we read what we can read, and we just have to keep adding books to the shelf. But I love libraries and I love bookstores, and I have never worked in a library or been a librarian, but I have worked in bookstores for many years. And I have many people I love who are librarians, including my stepmom. And there's an incredible librarian at Colby, Lane Thielstrom, who has sort of taught me about creative research and how to do library research creatively. So I really admire librarians, and I find libraries such soothing and wonderful places, and also places that are, rare, and thus vulnerable in this moment, for housing all kinds of ideas and for being safe public spaces.
Well, the book is Bad Animals. Sarah Bronstein, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I love your show, and I'm really excited that we got to have this conversation.
That was Sarah Bronstein, author of the book Bad Animals, which was published by W.W. Norton. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR Podcast Network. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. Our producers are Haley Krausen and Katie Lanning, and our marketing coordinator is Carly Cooper. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.